How y'all doing? Good. Have you all survived the Halloween trick-or-treat season and all that?
Thriving.
On a bit of a sugar high still? Or I've slipped into about a bit of a sugar coma. We have so much just candy left over our house, and people keep trying to pawn theirs off on me. I'm like, no, just take it away. So I'm glad we've all survived the season. Everybody get an extra hour of sleep last night? Feel a little extra rested? Good, you're going to need it this morning. So we've been, if you are a guest, welcome. We are going through the book of James. And Brian's really been reading it lately. So kudos to you, man. It's been really good. So, you know, James is one of those books where it's he doesn't beat around the bush. It's easy to get what he's talking about, but it's just really hard to live out the things he talks about. So this morning, you know, we usually read together, but I think we all are kind of, you know, still recovering from Halloween. So just maybe take a little bit of a day off, just kind of relax and just really listen to this morning to what James has to share with us. So here we are in James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26. What good is it, my brothers, if a man claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save him? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical deeds, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by what I do. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish man, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our ancestor Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called God's friend. You see that a person is justified by what he does and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. Whew. Well, let's sing a song and go home, right? Man, that's rough, isn't it? You know, it's really easy what he's saying. You know, faith without deeds is dead. But, man, it's hard to live out, isn't it? You know, in the beginning of the letter, James mentions that he's writing to the 12 tribes in the dispersion. So he's writing to Christian communities. He's writing to people who already believe, people who already have faith in Jesus. And so he's not writing to unbelievers. He's writing to Christians who are scattered outside of Palestine. So, you know, there's a bit of an edge to this then. He's like, you already believe, you already have faith, you know, you believe in one God, that's great, but even the demons believe. So what's the difference, I suppose? You know, and clearly, like, this was only written in his time and place. We clearly have gotten past this, right? We don't struggle with this anymore, do we? You know, I always like this. I see here by your recent religious and moral post that you are still a hypocrite. It's like, ah, oh, ouch. You know, if God judges me by my Facebook post and anything, you know, I'm in trouble. But yeah, hypocrisy. You know, everyone, the number one charge against Christians is always, you know, there's a bunch of hypocrites. I don't want to be a part of something like that. And frankly, they're right. We all have to fail to do and be the very things we say we believe. It's kind of funny to hear everyone say, like, oh, them Buddhists are just such hypocrites. But, you know, I mean, so for some reason, there's something about we fail to live up to the way in which Jesus lived. You know, last night, Taylor and I were watching Saturday Night Live. I don't know if anyone else caught it. Chris Rock was hosting, and he was doing his stand-up. And he was talking about the commercialization in America. We just commercialize everything. And he's like, come on, we've commercialized Jesus' birthday. And he went on to say, you know what? He's like, I don't know Jesus, but I've read enough to know that he was the least materialistic guy and like to ever lived. And so I was just thinking, wow, you know, Taylor and I, we found it funny and we were laughing. And it's like, you know, if Chris Rock, the prophet that he is can identify that the way that Jesus lived is not the way that Christians today live, maybe something needs to change. You know, I think that James, he wants to show us what faith is really like, the way that what true faith looks like. And for him to do that, he has to show us the way in which we do faith wrong. So he says that, you know, believe that there's one God. You know, great. Even the demons believe that. And obviously, James here isn't above using a little bit of sarcasm, but he's pointing out something that's kind of important among Jewish and Christians, that for both Jewish and Christians, that belief in one God is kind of a central concept. You know, in the ancient Near East, there were belief in a lot of gods. But for Jews and Christians both, you know, the belief in the one God is kind of one of your central beliefs. And so idolatry is kind of, you know, one of the chief sins that you could commit. So he's saying that here, that even if demons believe, you know, then how does faith look different? You know, the early church father, St. Augustine, said it like this. The devils confessed Christ. They had faith but not charity. Hence, they were devils. I think Augustine here points out something kind of interesting, that, you know, anyone can believe. You know, if you go take some sort of survey, you know, you oftentimes find that most people in America believe in God or a higher power of some sort. But, you know, they might not agree on what that God's like. But at the same time, most people believe in something. But what's the difference between just merely believing in God and having the kind of faith that James is talking about? What makes us believers and followers of Christ and not devils? I think James here is kind of saying the same thing, that faith without works is dead. You know, I think oftentimes we approach faith like a little checklist of beliefs we have to check off. So it's like, you know, I believe in God, Trinity, believe Jesus is the Son of God, believe he rose from the dead. You know, we just kind of go through and check off the list. And it kind of reminds me of these, you always see them on Facebook, these little like, what political party are you sort of a thing? Have you ever seen this pop up on your little feed or whatever? And you know, you already know who you're voting for, but you got to take it anyway, you know, just to make sure you haven't slipped off to the other side of the aisle. And so, you know, I did that this week. I just clicked on, and, you know, it says, check off, do you believe this, believe that, blah, blah, blah. At the end, it'll tell you, oh, you lean this way, or you're a Republican, you're a Democrat, you're a Libertarian, you know, what have you. That's how we often do it. We just check off these little beliefs and think that we're okay, that somehow someone else tells us who we are. So what's the, you know, I think that as someone in seminary and, you know, pastors and a theologian, that it's really hard sometimes to live out the kind of faith that God's calling you to, more, you know, to actually have faith, not just up here in the head, but to have it here in the heart, here in the hands. You know, if you were to look at my bookshelf at home and it's starting to overflow, my poor wife is just seeing all these books, just, and she's like, oh, no, we're going to have to pack these up and carry this with us when we move out. You know, I mean, a few weeks ago, I love to learn. I love to read and see what other people have said about God and to learn in that way. And, you know, a few weeks ago, Brian shared, he has to fill out a poll. Like, are you concerned about doing right, more concerned with having the right beliefs or doing the right things? And I checked the more right beliefs. I'm always trying to find out, you know, is this right? Does this match up with the Bible? Is this what God is like? And sometimes I just miss out on what God may be calling me to do in the moment. You know, I'll just sit around the table, and my poor wife is so patient with me. I'll be like, you know, hon, I'm really understanding the significance, the eschatological significance of the resurrection. And she'll be like, oh, you need a new hobby, dear. Because just so often I get so focused on just having the right belief in the head that I just miss out on what God's calling me to. So what happens when faith is just something we do with our head rather than something we do with our heart and our hands? Let's reflect on that a bit as we watch this video.
The way that we do faith, the way that faith is usually construed today is it's a psychological concept. We think of faith as this thing that happens in our head. It's a belief. It's an intellectual assent. And then we because we think of it as an intellectual concept, people tend to assume that the more certain you are, the stronger your faith is.
Makes sense?
That's the general assumption. And so then doubt is a sign of weak faith. And we talk this way, like, you know, oh, so-and-so just has such strong faith. They've never once doubted the Bible's God's word. Or so-and-so has such strong faith. They just know they're going to get healed. They're certain of it. And so then what happens is we have kind of this thing where certainty becomes a virtue and doubt becomes a vice. So you create a culture of people who are striving for certainty, trying to convince themselves that what they believe is right and trying to suppress all doubt. And that creates all sorts of weird things, like people get learning phobias because you don't want to read broadly because you might read it, come across something that's going to call your faith into question. And it's really weird because the people who are good at this tend to be simple people, or especially self-delusional people. They have no trouble believing, being certain of things that aren't real. And the people who tend to be poor at this are people who are balanced and more rationally minded, skeptical minded, which makes you wonder, why did God, you know, stack the decks against the balanced, rational people and in favor of the delusional, simple people? It just isn't fair. But that's the model of faith. So people just trying to convince themselves of this. And what's really, I mean, the thing that's really curious about it is that I think it's a form of idolatry, because what ends up happening is people's security and sense of being special before God and having worth comes not from their actual relationship with God, but it comes from how certain they feel about their beliefs about God.
This time we're going to dismiss our kids, Revolution Kids Church, so let's applaud them on as they go up to their classes. Learn a little about God. One of the best sounds here is hearing them all go upstairs. So I have a healthy church, right, Brian? I think he raised up a good point in the video. And it's kind of a weird thing, but you know, if you think about it a bit, it makes sense. That sometimes we put more faith in our beliefs about God rather than the God of our beliefs. I'll say that again, Tyler. Sometimes we put more faith in our beliefs about God than the God of our beliefs. What I mean by this, for example, let's say that you believe that God predestines all things, that all your actions in life are predetermined, and that you have no free will, no say in anything. If that's your belief about God, then you're going to be kind of hesitant to make decisions, because you might think that, for example, that, you know, what's the point in doing much of anything? Because, you know, I don't have a say in anything, so, you know, God's made all my decisions for me, and therefore there's no sense in taking a risk or taking a doubt. And, you know, I think this is the model of faith which James kind of speaks against. For example, he gives the example of Abraham here. He says, wasn't our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did? Kind of refresh your memory. If you're in our renovation groups right now, you know, you just read about Abraham recently. And he was told by God to take his son, who God had promised to him. You know, Abraham is 100 years old at this point, and so is Sarah is like in her 100 as well. And so they wait a long time to have a child. And eventually they finally get him, and then God says, all right, now go take him and sacrifice him and give him to me. Which is a really weird story. I don't quite know what to do with it because it's just kind of disturbing in a lot of ways. But you find throughout the whole time that Abraham seems convinced that God won't break his promise. His promise was to give him a child. And what you find here is that Abraham seems convinced the whole time. He says that, you know, me and my son are going to go over there and worship, and we're both going to be coming back. He says that God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering. So you find here that Abraham has this faith that God doesn't break his promises, that God will keep to the very things God said he will do. But can you imagine the doubt running through his mind as he walked up to the altar to sacrifice Isaac, thinking, is God going to come through with me here? With every step, wondering, am I really going to have to do this? Is God really going to call me to sacrifice my son? Just the sense of doubt, the risk, and the uncertainty is just going through, it's got to be going through his mind. Have you ever been in a time like that where you feel like God's called you to do something, but every step you take, you're like, God, you want to come through here? You know what I mean? For me, a few years ago, when I was feeling called to go to seminary and thought about moving away from home, it was just like, oh man, God, you want to really come through here? Will I find a church home? And, you know, and here I am, and you all welcomed me in, and it's been amazing. And even still now, I don't quite know where I'll be a few years from now and what church I'll be in or anything, but at the same time, it's like I'm feeling that every day, just taking that risk and that doubt. I'm like, all right, God, come through. You know, see, faith isn't a guarantee of certainty, but it often involves trust, risk, and doubt. Faith begins by having a willingness to risk, to trust, and to grow. A willingness to be open to new surprises. You know, a willingness to say that God may be calling you to do something, to maybe switch a new job or move to a new location or maybe even to move to a new church. I mean, a lot of you, when you began this church here, how much faith did it take to plant a new church? You know, the 70 of you who began, I mean, and look, here you are 4 years now and we're still here. God hasn't finished with us yet. You know, praise God. It always begins with this willingness to risk and trust and grow that God has something in store for us, that God won't break his promises, and that through God, we will thrive. You see, James goes on to say that, you see that his Abraham, his faith and his actions were working together. His faith was made complete by what he did. And the Greek word for working together is the same word as like we use for like synergy today. And so it, you know, it has to do with two people accomplishing more together than apart. And so for faith and works, it's not an either or. You don't have just faith or works. You have both, which is why we come to these roses here. And I know I'm wearing a tie and everything this morning, which is unusual, but I swear this isn't The Bachelor or anything. You know, I'm very happily married. But hopefully maybe this little illustration helped it make sense for me and maybe it will for you. You know, you always start. Faith always starts with seed. And yes, these are sunflower seeds because it's really hard to find any kind of seed this time of year. So if you're a botanist, forgive me for breaking rules a little bit here. You know, faith always starts with the seed. You know, it starts really small. You invest yourself just a little bit. And, you know, Jesus himself says you have faith the size of a mustard seed. You know, you can tell this mountain to come up and be lifted up. And so it always begins here, but it can't end here, can it? And unless you, like, nourish it and water it and take care of it, you know, it's not going to do a whole lot. It'll just stay small, and it won't go very far. So you need to nourish it and take care of it. And over here, our works here, you know, this is your water. This is what you take. This is what you nourish your faith with. But, you know, on the other, so you need this for your faith in order to grow. But at the same time, there's also the other end of the spectrum, where it's all works and no faith. So then maybe you pour yourself out, you give of yourself, you give of your time, your energy, your resources. You keep giving and giving and giving until one day you're empty. And without any kind of faith, without any kind of taking, filling your works with faith and believing that in the end everything is going to be okay, that resurrection is a real thing, that everything we do here matters. You know, when you bring these two together, you thrive. You flourish, you bloom. And the best thing about it is that you don't leave it alone. It doesn't just stay for us. You just take it, you give it, and share it with others. I know.
It is the
best. It is. Happy Pastor Appreciation Month. But no, it's like, you know, the worst kind of faith, the worst kind of faith is one we keep to our own. You know, if you keep flowers in your home, yeah, they look nice, they might make you feel good, but it feels a lot better to give them, you know? I mean, no one is ever angry to see someone show up at work with a bunch of flowers, right? You know, if you're a guy, you send your wife some flowers and she's not expecting it, you know, that just makes her day and probably make, never mind. You saw where I was going with that. Kids are upstairs. But, you know, it's always faith is something that we can't keep to ourselves. It's something which we share with others. It's something that we put into action. It's something we live out. The example of Rahab, you know, you also read about her recently as well, that it says in the same way, was not Rahab considered righteous for what she did? You know, she wasn't Jewish. She wasn't an Israelite or anything, but she opened up her home for the people of Israel when they're coming into Jericho to take it over, and she took a risk, though, just like Abraham, that, you know, she says, you know, I'll give you my space, but promise me that, you know, you will spare me and my family. But still, that's a risk in doubt, isn't it? It's taking a chance that you will keep your promises. It's believing that this God of mercy and justice will look after me. But there's an amount of doubt, like, will they come through here? Faith, again, isn't certainty, but it is some. It doesn't mean that you don't think. It doesn't mean you don't read and study. You know, it's head, heart, and hands. It's not, faith isn't always blind, but there still is an element of doubt. There's an element of risk and trust that the thing God's calling you to, will work out in the end. Again, the worst kind of faith is one which we keep to ourselves. In our culture to this day, you know, most people are okay with religion. They say, you know, kind of keep it to yourself, just be private about it. But I don't think this is the kind of faith that James is calling us to. I think that the kind of faith James is calling to him very much entails a lot of risk and doubt and trust. That what God is doing will redeem and restore all of creation.
But in the again, let me invite the band back up. It's for me, I know, like for a lot of us here, what we're doing here, you know, we're getting ready to probably move in 2 years again, so our communities want to change again as we continue to grow. And so there's still a little bit of undoubt and unbelief, a little bit of doubt and belief. Like, what's, you know, God hasn't finished with us yet, but what's God calling us to next? You know, and I'm really excited about a lot of the opportunities we've gotten involved with lately, with our partnership with Go Ministries, our going down to 4th Avenue every month, and Family Scholar House. I mean, we feel like God's really called us to invest time and work alongside these people. And I wonder how we might be changed throughout the process. Through by being faithful and serving those who God would call us to serve, how might we be changed in the process? Think about that a little bit as we continue to worship this morning. Like Rahab, her act of faith was hospitality. It was opening up her home to strangers. You know, faith begins here in our community. Everything we do matters. The way we greet people at the door, the way we serve them coffee, the way we serve them communion, everything matters. Faith begins by recognizing what God has done in our own lives, being able to share that with others, to invite people into this loving community. And so, may we practice that. May we practice welcoming the stranger. May we practice being hospitable and to the point where it spills out and we welcome and trust others, or willing to take a risk and get to know new people. And we'll hear a little bit of that story here in a few by Chad when he shares his BTR. But still, may we risk. May we trust. Maybe we'd be willing to doubt. It may be throughout this process we'll find something that God has in store for us. Let us pray.